All right, here we go. Episode 10. Today we're going to talk about cracks. And we're going to talk about what a natural tooth has as far as cracks and crack defenses, and what a biomimetic restoration has as far as cracks and crack defenses. And the paper we're going to highlight, we mentioned that in episode 9. This is episode 10. This is Abbott and Lowe, and this is the clinical trial that has established crack dissection as the most effective way to treat a cracked tooth. When I was a traditional dentist, cracks became a big part of my practice. After 10 years, I started to have fillings break, teeth break, crowns would break, and often the crowns, if they'd had root canals, the whole root would break and the tooth would be lost. So those types of failures are usually called catastrophic failures. If you have a piece of the tooth break off and you repair the tooth, or you have a restoration placed, it's usually a larger restoration, so a broken tooth under a filling will become a crown. And then quite often, if a crown broke off, then you would have a root canal at the least. But the root canal treatments required some way to connect the root to the restoration. And so that's a buildup. And the buildup was placed with a post. So in dental school, I learned how to put posts into roots that would retain the buildup, that would retain the crown. This is traditional prosthodontic protocols. But as I did that in my first 10 years of practice, at about year 10, people would come in with the crowns in their hands or the root in their hand. Or they would say, my crown is loose. And what really had happened is the root had fractured and now the tooth had to be extracted. So these types of failures became very depressing to me. And I knew that if I kept doing what I was doing, I would have the same results in another 10 years. But I would be even more unhappy because my first 10 years, I had the myth that I was going to be successfully restoring these teeth long term. And so this idea of doing the same thing and expecting different results, you know, that's the definition of insanity that I think Einstein said. But the idea is that in dentistry, if we keep doing the same thing, we're going to have the same results. So every dentist who's considering getting training in the 6 lessons in the biomimetic approach should say, am I happy with the results that I'm having of these cases that I've treated? The happiness for me came when a tooth was treated, and in 5 years, it was still doing fine. And then in 10 years, was it doing fine? And now with the biomimetic protocols, we have 15 and 20 year and even more than 20 year successes. And in Japan, they have similar success rates depending on if the tooth is vital or non-vital. And this idea of managing cracks in teeth and how they relate to cracks into restored teeth, this is a continuum of small problems to teeth that are lost from these cracks and the crack propagation. But the real progress for me, the real breakthrough, was in January 2000, I bought a microscope. 25 years ago, I had upgraded my magnification when I started to do adhesive dentistry to a 4.5 magnification. And that was a real eye-opener. I'm seeing things that I couldn't see. Decay using caries detecting dye was very easy to distinguish a pink from a red from a no stain, even in a deep area with 4.5. But when I went to 6 with the microscope, that was like another level of being able to see things. But I also was able to visualize these cracks at different stages of progression. And these cracks that can take a tooth out always start small. Originally, when I would have a patient who had a tooth that had pain on biting, the diagnosis that I would make was cracked tooth syndrome. And what I was taught in dental school, the treatment was full coverage. So I would do a full coverage crown on this tooth, and the symptoms would usually improve. But then quite often, 5 years later, the patient would come in with that crown in their hand. And if you looked inside the crown, their tooth was inside the crown. And the only thing that I could think of when that happened Wow, Cindy, you really bit on something really hard. In other words, my whole idea of a tooth breaking off is like one episode of tremendous force taking the whole thing out. I mean, I just didn't understand crack initiation. I didn't understand crack propagation. I didn't understand a catastrophic failure. All these things, I just had no clue. In dental school, I was not introduced to cracks in any shape, way, or form. But I had a personal experience in dental school. I had a tooth that had pain on biting. The diagnosis in those days was pain on biting. You should put a crown on it. This tooth had an occlusal amalgam. The isthmus width was about 1.5 to 2 millimeters. Just a small occlusal filling that had been done 10 years previous when I was 18 years old. And now this is my senior year in dental school. I'm 27 years old. It's a repeatable symptom. Everybody looks at it with their Explore and their 2.5 loops and with a mirror. And then they take an x-ray. They don't see anything. I have the symptom, but they don't see anything. Usually, if you had crack tooth syndrome that was treated, you'd see a discoloration around a filling or a chip around a filling. You know, I had had a few patients like that in dental school. They really didn't want to call it crack tooth syndrome because it wasn't every time it hurt a lot. It was just a transient pain. So nothing got done in dental school. And then over the years, sometimes it would hurt, sometimes it wouldn't. Same thing, take an x-ray, no decay. You can't see a crack that's in this plane through an x-ray. Sometimes a little bit if it's really wide. But anyway, there's a whole series. But this goes on for another decade and then even into the second decade after dental school. So now I'm into adhesive dentistry and I am diagnosing myself because I know Martin Branstrom's work that we talked about last episode. And Branstrom with the crack tooth syndrome is more sophisticated and said, do you have pain on cold? So not only biting, but cold indicates that we have a communication. The fluid is moving in and out, and that's causing the pain. So it's the theory of the movement of pulpal fluid was first called the hydrodynamic theory. Now we call it the hydrodynamic source because we've actually identified the nociceptor flagella that actually pick up the pain. That was work of Charlie Cox that nobody knows about. But anyway, I'm in my office. I know what I do. I've got cracked tooth. And now I have a intraoral camera. I look at my teeth and I see a crack on the marginal ridge. So the perforatum fracture that we talked about last week, I see it on my intraoral camera. Okay, man, let's go. I've got a crack into dentin. So I have my assistant bring me my anesthesia. I give myself the shot, put my rubber dam on. My assistants are cracking up. They're dying. So under rubber dam and with the intraoral camera, I'm able to identify a vertical crack. I dissect the crack, proceed to, with air abrasion, do my immediate sealing, resin coating, biobase, take an impression, make an onlay outside the mouth. The next day, I came back, cemented the onlay. It's still there. So 20 years ago, I dissected a crack, successfully cemented the onlay. This was the same thing that I was teaching other dentists to do, because when I got my microscope, I could see the cracks. If they went horizontally, a part of the tooth would come out, but if they went vertically, the tooth would be lost or the pulp would be dead, because that vertical isn't going to miss the pulp. It's going to hit the pulp. Okay, so everything's good. Until 2010, 11, I start speaking for CoreRA, and I'm on the road a lot. Onlay on the bottom is doing great. I have a piece of the top chip off. Now, I didn't look at it very carefully because I'm on the road. I just put a little composite up there, put a light on it. Don't get food impaction. I just keep doing my thing. No pain up there. It doesn't hurt. My diagnosis at that time was I've got a fracture of enamel. Well, fracture of enamel happens when a crack from enamel goes to the DEJ, and then the crack is deflected, the rest of the enamel is cracked, and it delaminates. So that's what we call a clinical failure, or something that is not biologically taxing to the tooth. That was a misdiagnosis, because a year later, a large piece of my tooth broke off, and that tooth is now not in my head. It was a fracture vertically down the mesial buccal root, and the tooth was lost. What happens? Well, In dental school, we did learn of a neurologic phenomena called referred pain. The nerve that gives feeling to your teeth and to your eye is called the trigeminal nerve. Trigeminals mean there's three bodies. The first body goes to the eye area, the second body goes to the maxilla, the third body goes to the mandible. So this trigeminal nerve is the largest of the cranial nerves. But what happens is that this pain that goes back to this one body that's called the trigeminal body in the skull as it goes to the brain, it gets a little bit confused. In other words, you can have these three major branches, and they have branches that go into each tooth or into the eyelid, into the eyeball. If you get pain here, when it gets back to the skull, into that trigeminal body, you can get pain crossing, and the brain interprets that as pain from the top, but it's really coming from the bottom, or vice versa. Pain from the bottom can really be coming from the top. So that's called referred pain. That's a very well-known phenomena in medicine, and anatomically, it's related to this trigeminal nerve. When this tooth was lost, you know, I said, that's interesting, because I always had this over these 15 years, these symptoms that are coming and going. And Martin Branstrom described that in 1982. He said, well, you get the crack started, but then you have a little bit of mineralization happening that impedes the movement of the fluid in the tubules. And also you have what's called secondary dentin into the pulp chamber. And so the actual distance increases, and these attenuate or even eliminate the pain in many patients. And so the symptom that you're really looking for is not a consistent pain, but a recurring pain. Now, when I read that in 1982 and then related it to my own experience, having a successful treatment in 2005 and an unsuccessful failure 7 years later, all of these things become very personal. I lost a tooth because nobody could diagnose, even myself, the referred pain. I fixed one, but in reality, I had two vertical cracks right on top of each other, because that's the place that I like to chew. You know, ever since you're 6 years old, you find most patients chew more on one side of the mouth than the other. Some people chew on both sides equally, but I was a right side chewer. I like to crush things. I like to eat ice or nuts on that right side. But that force of occlusion is distributed first through the enamel. The enamel has a way to relieve that stress so that it doesn't go into the vital part of the tooth. And that's called enamel fractures. Enamel fractures actually are quite complex. It's not a straight line. You know, you go, amyloblasts just go from the DJ out to the surface. And the odontoblasts go from the DJ down to the pulp. And they stay there. I mean, that's what you learn. It's a basic. But this is what's really happening. And it's like music. The finest music weaves different parts and is going in different directions. And so this is called a decussation. And so a decussation, this woven enamel, gives it the ability with great difficulty to get fractured. But if it does fracture, these decussations, again, move the fractures. And then they get to this massive area of the DEJ, which is these invaginations of enamel and these invaginations of dentin that have this interphase. And all of a sudden, these fractures in enamel get diverted. And so the fracture in enamel usually stays in enamel, stops at the DEJ. That's the biomimetic way to deal with functional stresses. I mean, you're always going to be chewing on your teeth, but how those forces get dissipated, first there's a little bit of movement, expansion of these enamel, what we call rods, but really they're these decussated layers. And this little expansion is about 3 or 4 microns. All the rods just shift a little bit. If you destroy the middle of the tooth, which we called the Rainey ridges last time, these subocclusal oblique transverse ridges, then all of a sudden, instead of going 3 microns, every time a tooth is chewed on, we get 175 microns separation of the tooth from the restoration. Remember, bacteria is 1 to 3 microns. These vibrations are these small little movements. Nothing is separating. It's just absorbing and distributing the stress. But the stress distribution of the whole tooth comes in the bottom And that bottom part we call the biorim. And that's the area where we actually have forces from the enamel that usually go down. Now, as they conjoin with the dentin kind of expands a little bit like this. So this is called isotropic movement, this expansion. The top movement is called anisotropic. It only goes in one direction. The isotropic movement expands. And this is really miraculous. We do this a million times a year. We don't think about it at all. But when we do it, the forces have to go somewhere. And those forces in a natural tooth are distributed. And if we get a lot of force, then we can have these small little areas that fail. At the bottom of the tooth, this decussation is not tied into the dentin very well because it's so thin, and that's the place where an abfraction lesion starts. But the idea is that when we're trying to mimic something in nature, we're always going to be, if we're smart, really humbled by the idea of even coming close. It's not a duplication of nature. We're just trying to get close and have some ideas that make the tooth act like a tooth. So in the year 2000, I've got my microscope. I'm learning about cracks. I'm seeing major cracks. I'm relating that to my failures that I've had in my clinical practice in the previous 20 years. And all of a sudden, I'm saying, I need to know more about cracks. And so I happen to have a good friend who's a crack expert. And his cracks are on airplanes, mostly airplane wings. And so I said, Dennis, I said, you're a smart guy. You're an engineer. You're fixing these $2 billion stealth bombers at Hill Air Force Base. What do you do with cracks? He says, well, first we have to find them. So we have detailed inspections regularly. And these skins of the airplane, these stealth bombers, are all made out of carbon fiber. Ribbon, composite, it's very similar. I asked him if he'd ever heard of a leno weave. He says, oh yeah, he brought over a book. He showed, this is what a leno weave is. And then we start talking more about cracks in general. I said, well, you know, the skin where you're going to bond over it, that's important. But what do you do with the crack under the skin? He says, well, you have to take it out. How do you do it? He says, well, I take a big drill, bigger than the crack. And then it has a round end on it. And I just go down and look at a microscope and see if the crack's gone. If it's not, then you drill a little more and then you look at it. And then the bonding procedure inside is basically a bonding procedure that we're all familiar with, because these resin molecules, they all originated with the idea of the epoxy resins that were invented by Castan in 1936. So all of the chemistry is some variation of epoxy. First, you start out with a slow cure, chemical cure, and then you can go to the light cure systems. Anyway, very, very similar to fixing teeth. And so Dennis and I would talk when we were playing golf about fixing teeth, fixing airplanes. But the idea is that these cracks in a natural tooth are confined to dentin and stop the DJ. But if a crack goes past that under prolonged forces, accumulating and fracturing these fail-safe mechanisms that are in the natural tooth, if it goes, then you feel it. And that's Brandstrom. And that's the system telling you you've got a bigger problem. You don't have these little problems. You got a bigger problem. And that's the pain that's coming into the trigeminal nerve. And all of a sudden, that pain on biting says this tooth is not acting like a normal tooth. And that's a highway for infection. And this is what kills pulps. Now, some pulps die very dramatic death. Other pulps die slowly. I was having symptoms on two teeth. The top tooth died a slow death, never had a major toothache, but I lost that tooth. The small symptoms on the bottom were diagnosed and treated correctly. And that's the success of a diagnosis early and an early treatment where we're reconnecting the tooth side to side, front to back, top to bottom. And that connection side to side is in the outside layers, not in the inside layers. In a natural tooth, We don't have a connection in the pulp area. That's a very soft material. But the connection side to side is coming through a 360-degree connection around the tooth. Graham Milicic likes to make the analogy of a compression dome. A dome doesn't have middle connections. It has side connections, and the top compression on the solid side foundations make it function in that way. In the six lessons approach, we always say a crack into enamel is biomimetic. It's the way the tooth's designed. A crack into dentin is not biomimetic and needs to be treated. This paper in 2009 treated these cracks by dissecting the cracks, the same as my friend Dennis Grohl would dissect a crack on a B2 bomber. And the two endodontists that wrote this paper, Abbott and Lowe, had symptomatic teeth that they tested the pulp. It had a vital test, but then they dissected the crack and then restored, not with a sophisticated bonding system even. They just restored it with glass ionomer, and they had a 95% success rate. Other approaches to cracks where you bond over, the reported success rates are in the 30s or 40s, maybe 50%. So this is a significant difference. Of course, the glass ionomer restoration of the dissected crack didn't hold up under function. Something had to be done so that it would have a functional stability, but it proved the point of dissection. Now, I wish I would have known this paper, you know, in dental school, but of course I didn't. I had to figure it out myself with the help of engineers. But now we have, in our own practice-based research network, 20 years of experience teaching and performing crack dissections and successfully treating teeth that have had crack dissections with advanced adhesive techniques of deep margin elevation, immediate dentin sealing, semi-direct techniques for enamel replacements. But that's the idea, is that cracks in enamel, that's biomimetic stress relief. Cracks into dentin or a pathology can kill the pulp with infection or take the tooth out with a vertical root fracture. So until next time, for number 11, get bonded, stay bonded.